Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, the Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Marty Caleb, joined by...
The shenanigans that have gone on off-screen since the start of this podcast today have baffled and confused me. I don't know what's going on over there, Mark. I'm Jordan Schmidt, by the way. Welcome to the show. I don't know. Either you're hiding a birthday cake, a large tiger, a murder. I don't know what you're doing over
or
there.
Or all three.
My birthday isn't until, like, November. You know that. It's the day after yours. Well, seeing as there's shenanigans going on over at the Halem residence, I figured let's at least, it's a good way of segueing into our most shenanigans-friendly director that we're talking about this week, Tex Avery,
yes.
Where we picked three cartoons he didn't do at Warner Brothers. And it's a lot like, you know, I can't believe I'm just now making this comparison, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot like Tex Avery is the George Harrison of Termite Terrace, because everything he did while he was there, it's very good, but it seems constricted. It seems like there's somebody breathing down his neck. Seems like he's not doing what he wants to do. Then when he goes and does his own thing at, you know, at MGM, it feels like he's doing what he's been wanting to do all along, and it's more vibrant and more big, and he's come into his own, and that's the more beloved stuff.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty accurate depiction, really. Yeah, I mean, you look at Tex's work at Warner Brothers, and it really does feel like it's like, yep, he's, you know, he's getting his craft, he knows what his style is, and then he goes to MGM, where he's given much more freedom, a higher budget in animation, and is happy where he is for not that long of a time. I actually look at the timeline of Tex Avery at MGM, and it's weird because it's like he left WB, went to MGM, was there for a couple of years, took a one-year sabbatical for some reason, came back, stayed for like a year, and then he was like, either screw this, I'm out, or we're changing direction because Hanna and Barbera came up with this cat and mouse team. Everything's going to do wonders for us. I don't know what happened, but it's pretty, it's so short, Jordan, that the Blu-ray collection of his shorts MGM, the Tex Avery Screwballs collection, which was the Warner Archives' pet project before they got the Looney Tunes license. The whole thing with that right now is that they released three volumes, and I think they would only need to release one more volume to cover his entire filmography at MGM. Like, it really wasn't that long of a run.
Great.
But,
awesome.
Yeah. So right now they're focusing on Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera, but honestly, they're probably gonna release it this year. I think they'll release it this year because they've been very much like, hey, we're going to do more other stuff animation-wise besides Looney Tunes. So hopefully they get to that. But anyways, so these shorts that we are covering today are Blitzwolf, Dumbhounded, ending with Symphony in Slang.
Right. Two of these we've talked about in previous Tex episodes. The other one, part of the course, because it's a droopy. It's funny because, like, prepping for this episode awakened memories that I hadn't really gone back to in a while of watching Cartoon Network's Tex Avery show blocks. Just wall-to-wall MGM and post-Warner cartoons. And I forgot how much of those I really enjoyed, because that was, like, early 2000s they were showing those, but like they showed at least one of these in those blocks, and I remember at the very least one of these being in there very fondly.
Yeah, these are, we're gonna have fun today. That's the
vibe.
We're
gonna have lots of fun,
lots and lots of fun. Dog is fresh out of indoors.
We're going to have lots of fun. After the dog stops erupting the fucking... The dog keeps trying to dig up the murder weapon. And... folks, not to beat around the bush, but this may be the last episode of the podcast before Mark is put away for murder. So... let's at least enjoy ourselves now.
Yes. Okay. So let's go into the first short today. It's Blitz Whoop. Actually, the first short today, and also the first short done with Texavery MGM, it's Blitz Whoop.
Yeah, this is the first thing he does when he leaves Warner, which is this is what he's given the freedom to do, Blitz Whoop. And, okay.
Yeah. This short came out on August 22nd. 1942. In regards to what happened on that day, there was a war going on. Hit the music. Okay. Brazil declares war on Germany, Japan, and Italy on this day. Sure. You know, I'm sure that didn't lead to anything drastic or anything.
The Brazilian army came up with massive sticks and massive, like, truncheons, and they proceeded to lay upon the Germans 500 bazillion wax.
Mmm.
Get it? Brazilian wax?
So, Blitz Wolf was directed by Tex Avery with story credit by Rich Hogan.
All three of these are written by Rich Hogan.
Yeah, they kind of had this partnership. So, like, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, hey.
He was his Michael Maltese.
Yes. So, like I said, this was the first Tex Avery short made at MGM. And reportedly, during the production of this cartoon, because you see, this was 42. The war was still kind of going on. It was in its early stages. Apparently, Fred Quimby... The Leon Schlesinger / Eddie Seltzer guy. He's like the one cartoon producer that actually stayed throughout the entire run, essentially, of the classic cartoon division. Fred Quimby cautioned Avery to, quote, go easy on this Hitler fella, because it was uncertain who would triumph in the war.
Go easy on this Hitler fella. Copyright Neville Chamberlain, 1936.
You know, I saw on Last Week Tonight, last week, I believe, that one of Clarence Thomas's...
Last Week and Last Week Tonight.
Exactly, yeah. By Clarence Thomas is one of his buddies, a very rich fella, and he also owned a bunch of Nazi memorabilia, including a signed copy of Mein Kampf.
I didn't even know he did autograph signings.
I know, right? God.
Like, I know the bit in Last Crusade where Hitler signs the, you know, the Grail Diary. That's one thing. But, like, were people rushing at him during the war going, will you sign my copy? Oh, yes, anything for a fan. You know, like, I don't think it really worked like that. Like,
yeah.
I don't think people are rushing at Trump with copies of Art of the Deal. Mostly because nobody who likes Trump actually admits that book is good. Or that he wrote it. But it's just, you know, that's baffling to me that people are still allowed to do that. But go easy on this Hitler fella. Yeah, sure. That actually sounds not only like a Fred Quimbyism, but like the kind of thing that the Simpsons character that would hold his name knowingly would say, Mayor Quimby.
Oh!
Go, hey, make sure you go easy on this Hitler fella.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They named it. It was a cartoon thing. It was like, okay, now name him Quimby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we'll name him after a Kennedy. They're known to be nice with the Germans.
Nothing bad ever happens to the Kennedys.
This short did get an Oscar nomination. However, it lost to that other anti-Nazis short animated film, the Donald Duck one. Yeah.
The Fuhrer's face? Wow. All right. Cool.
Yeah. And listen, I've seen the Fuhrer's face. There's a way to do propaganda and also have it be kind of like funny and like entertaining enough as its own. The Fuhrer's face is very much like dressing up the messages and presenting it through Donald. And it's like, That's the joke, really. It's just, wow, Donald's a Nazi. That's the joke. It's like, oh, okay. Buy war bonds. Okay, gonna be funny here. Nope, it's the war.
It goes as well as Disney doing propaganda as you might expect that to be.
Yeah, pretty much. It wasn't great. While with this one, let's get into it. So, the short begins with a foreword. Quote, "The wolf in this photo play is not fictitious. Any similarity between this wolf and that motherfucking goddamn son of a bitch jerk Hitler is purely intentional." They blur
the auto tires used in this photo play are purely fictitious.
So we begin with that. Just right off the page. Hey, we're gonna be a little silly.
Can you imagine just screening that for Quimby and just like 5 seconds in front? Oh, hold it. What did I tell you about going easy on this Hitler fella? First. Okay, Mark leaves again.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. How many people does it take to get rid of a body, Mark? Oh my God. It's like a revolving door this episode. Jesus. Is getting the TV moved in?
Be careful with that statue! It's very Nazi-like! I sure hope my neighbors aren't home. Anyways,
what are we doing this episode?
I don't know, man. Alright, so, we begin our story, and it's a Three Little Pigs send-up. Yet again, yeah. It's a Three Little Pigs cartoon send-up. So it begins, you know, one pig built his house with straw. The other one built his house with sticks. And the third pig pan over the big war weapons, yeah. Just bullets ready to go crazy. And we get this third pig, which the voice sounds familiar.
It sounds like, could it be the same guy that does Groupie?
You fellas can laugh, but you'd better quit playing around and get down to work. Buy bombs. Help support our national defense program. So you'll be prepared for the big bad wolf.
Yeah. Well, yep. Sarah Berner, Ken Rock, yeah. And these are all the...
All the
mainstays that aren't Mel Blanker here. So, right off the bat, this pig is like... Listen, buy war bonds, prepare. This Adolf guy is gonna come. Look at this newspaper. And I wrote this down, love it so much. Just like if he does come, just if he do it, he gets a whipping.
I think around here they make it a point to show a swastika made out of sausages. Man, oh man.
Get out of people know.
I want to eat sausage. I don't want my sausages to be political.
Hey, when that happens. So, other than the two other pigs are like, oh, he's not gonna come. He agreed to this treat, to this agreement. Here. Looks like they have the agreement. It's like saying, like, I swear I'll never. It's written very funny. I didn't write it down, but it's pretty much like.
It's very silly.
I promise that if I ever did, I'd be a stinker. Signed, Adolf Wolf.
Yeah. It's you know, it's like, yeah. As I even wrote in my notes here, like, yeah, treaty, that'll stop him.
just the pig going like, this isn't worth the paper it's printed on. This is pointless.
Yeah.
As, what's this? It's the Nazis.
Yeah. They're not subtle about it. They just have a full invasion. And it's just this really cool and over-the-top and well-done animation of the Nazi invasion in Three Little Pigs. And the quality whiplash of this cartoon, of the terrific match shot of the tanks under a red sky, of just, I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. And seconds later, I'm laughing at the good humor truck being in there. You know, a tank, like, just, like, firing at civilians and then putting up a sign that says, I don't want to set the world on fire. Again, that's very much, like, in line with the Germans' message of wanting peace while also, you know, wanting to kill everybody.
So eventually, Hitler arrives in a little tank called, has the words, Der Führer, Der Better.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fucked up.
This is a place that it's like the South Park episode. It's like Osama bin Laden has farty pants, where
pretty much
you're getting laughs, but from the most fucked up ways possible. Of like, okay,
yeah,
you're this is a genuinely terrible person, and we're lampooning them.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to point out regards like the WB, because we've looked at Warner Brothers' World War II shorts.
We're going to look at a couple more in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And I think with those, and honestly, I personally have my final thoughts, but I have thought now. Those shorts, I feel, makes fun of the iconography, you know. Oh, this is what Hitler's supposed to look like. Let's make fun of that, except he's a bird. Oh, here's, you know, oh, here's some swastika jokes.
Here's Hermann Göring as a Viking oaf thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I feel like with this rendition of the Hitler character, it's very much like we actually watch the newsreels. We know exactly what he's planning, and we're making fun of the exact things he's trying to do while still being funny as hell, because it's a Tex Avery cartoon and he can't help himself. So like, for instance, I love when he does show up. Just pulls up a sign and says, "Go on and hiss, who cares?"
Yeah. That's very much indicative of this being played in packed theaters.
Yeah.
Also, somebody throws a tomato at him, which means he sang out of key probably at some point. But there is no peace or love in the heart of Adolf Hitler. He is the anti-Ringo.
Exactly. So so he goes up to the third pager, but he's like, "Wait a minute, you don't really want to take over my country? You promised this, right?" And then the amazing delivery.
Are you kidding?
It's like, yes, I want to do this.
In addition to being, like, you know, obviously lampooning Hitler and this terrible and indefensible person, you have this wolf be this very silly character, almost knowingly silly, of just the way he runs is really, really silly, and just like the... this subtitle gag where he's just saying, like, the German equivalent of Frambley, which is the fake French that Chuck would do up for the Pepe Le Pew cartoons. Where, and that kind of subtitle gag is okay because you're making fun of Germans. And, you know, they're still white. You're good. But, yeah, it's just that they're delegitimizing Hitler by making him look like a silly cartoon character. He's not that intimidating in this.
No, but there's just amazing, lots of amazing sign gags in this. For example, he just blows up one of the houses, and it just says, a sign says, "Gone with the Wind." And I swear to God, my real-time reaction was, you know, "Gone with the Wind." Ha! Pan out. Corny joke, isn't it?
Yep. I miss this, Tex.
Oh, my God.
Now, the thing is that because this is in the midst of World War II, and because the Germans aren't the only people in this conflict, there were a couple of not-so-great racist gags at the expense of the Japanese littered in here, because there's one where there's a sign on the third pig's door where it says, "No dogs," and then that was crossed out, and they wrote in, "No Japanese people," and that's not great!
That's not great. I especially don't like the other gang they do where...
Yeah, the other one's not much better either.
For no reason, really, other than, well, it's a World War II, we have to. Like, a missile goes off, and there's this very, admittingly, a very nicely drawn, detailed version of Japan, Tokyo, and then it gets blown up. It's like, that's not good. That's not okay.
Yeah. I would say stay focused.
Exactly, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, because you're going on Hitler and the Germans right now. You might want to keep doing that. I know it's a whole Axis thing. I know it's like, oh yeah, the Germans are also in the conflict. But like, this is a Hitler-centric metaphor. And I don't think Japan really had a place in the metaphor. You were just spiteful towards them for Pearl Harbor, and you wanted to make sure they didn't get out scot-free.
Exactly. Anyways... So, the one gag I like here where they have this, I think this is around the same time of this Japan joke, but it's like the pigs are looking through this long, like, missile thing.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on and on. I just watch this going, like, oh, please, please tell me there's a freaking, like, how long is going to be joke. And then sure enough, there's a little sign that says, like, long darn thing, isn't it?
Long darn thing, isn't it?
And she goes up to the top. It's like, yeah.
It's Avery being self-aware.
Exactly. Like, this is the difference between doing long gags to waste time and actually have pulling off a really good gag. Because if the timing was a little bit off, it wouldn't feel as tight of a gag. Here, it's really well done.
Okay, we've got, there was one that we skipped over that was the Scream Bomb that I really liked.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's labeled Scream Bomb, and then just sort of lands on that side. And just, it's a perfectly, I think it was a Sarah Berner scream or somebody, but just wonderful.
Hey, a Scream Bomb? Just throw in Scream 5!
I've been, and you can cut this out if you want, been going back and researching yearly stuff. And there was one time, in a yearly's where I did a Statler and Waldorf bit and went to the door. And it was like such an unexpected jab at another game that Mick, you could hear Mick being caught off guard and going in and just, like that was good.
Oh man.
Oh my god. I also like the little gag where the bomb is being sent over the pig's side and one of the pigs stops it by giving him a pickup model.
I love this so much.
The bomb goes back and seven other bombs come over and they start gawking at the pinup model together.
That's so good. Because that is again, that's very much like he did this joke at Warner Brothers, essentially. But I love now, with MGM money, they can be like, let's have like eight more missiles come over and also look at it. Like we can afford that now, and it's so fucking good. It's so much better.
I mean, this is a 10-minute cartoon. They can afford to do whatever like over the top gags they want, as many of them as possible.
And this is another thing that I noticed when watching these is these are long. Like they're not none of these I believe are 7 minutes long. They're all like 9-10 minutes long, essentially, and they just use all the time in a really good way, perfectly. So there's one moment where one of the missile hoses, I don't fucking know what they're called. It's low on vitamins. It's just on the ground.
Yeah.
So the pig just gives him vitamins. And what am I to think of this subtle a flaccid, long tube, all of a sudden springing to rigidity as it blasted off bullets.
And no pinup model in sight.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's what he was going for.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, that's got some bond right there. So I wrote down here, I mean, this is much later in the cartoon, but the incendiary bomb where Hitler's getting a phone call and I do look just he's like quiet and like bombs going off. We just
I
like,
love that the bombs just stop.
It's like hey, how are you doing? What's cooking?
He's calling I think Eva or somebody like
probably
some woman.
Yeah. And then, like, this other bomb drops, and all the bomb does is just, it puts a match underneath his foot, lights it. Eventually, he's like, oh, that's hot! Cut to his foot. It's a sausage. For sure.
Very silly. Yeah, no, I will say, with this being 10 minutes long, it does sort of run out of steam at around the 7 or 8 minute mark, and a lot of the gags kind of run into each other.
Yeah, because, like, after the incendiary bomb joke. That's pretty much all I wrote down until the ending. So,
same.
All right, so let's get into it. So the pigs are really going at it. There is a moment where in this confusion, Blitzwolf is on the missile thing. It goes off.
Yeah.
And the wolf is now on the missile. It's like, Oi! Yeah. No! Let's go. The missile starts falling. Speaks a bunch of random gibberish. He says... Which, again, like... he did the research! Exactly. Yeah, pretty much. Like, all this stuff's going down. There's bombs and explosions by the pigs. And it did get to a point where it was so over the top, I kind of went, huh, this is where Michael Bay got his ideas from.
Yeah, kind of.
It kind of gave that impression a little bit. It's like, oh, okay, I think we're a little bit overboard here. Which, again, is funny, but it's also like we're like 9 minutes in, so maybe like, hurry up.
Yeah, it's like, all right, you know, right?
So eventually, he holds onto a missile, sorry, a bomb, whatever, goes all the way down to the ground, lands in hell, and, yeah. And again, this is another great example of what you could do with money at MGM, because, like, we're familiar with the Howard Wolfberg cartoons, where it's very much, you know, it's simple shaded, but then there's fire and stuff. With MGM money, the hell is very in-depth. It's very detailed. Yeah. The fire practically looks like real fire. Like, it's really high-quality stuff. As the Hitler wolf, it's just like, oh, hey, wait, is this? Just go over to all the demons or whatever.
Yeah, it's a possibility. It's a very Tex ending. It's the kind of thing he would be doing at Warner, so that's perfect.
And speaking of a Warner ending, it ends with like a bunch of rings coming in. Did you catch that? It's like,
oh, just to make him feel at home, I guess.
Yeah, like a little ring. Well,
remember these, buddy?
Yeah, it's just the end. And again, at the very end, they had it was like a war message. Like, it's the end of Adolf, if you'll buy a stamp or bond.
Yeah.
We'll skin that skunk across the pond.
Yeah. No, it's lots of... That's the other problem I have with this one, where, like, it's still very, like, flag-wavy.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of that thing, unfortunately, where it's like, it's the 40s. They didn't know what else to do. It's like, well, we have to be full on patriotic, don't we? Like, that's how it works here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but, like, again, there's more flagrant patriotism cartoons out there, is what it is. Yeah. But I will say... Yeah, it's that and the spitefulness toward the Japanese that gets in the way of perfection here. Mm. But not only are the gags excellent, but framing this as a wartime story actually really works and evolves the concept from just a simple three pigs thing. So many great gags, so many great ideas, like great animation, obviously. Maybe a bit overlong, but extremely good.
Yeah, I am deducting some points for the Japanese stuff because, again, it's pretty unnecessary. Yeah. But everything else about this is pretty well paced, in my opinion, for a 9-minute short. There's pretty much gags a minute. For a short release during the war, and this is... Okay, so at first I gave it just to this cartoon, but honestly I kind of give it to all three of these. Shorts made in the 40s and 50s, and yet the gag mentality is not dated in the slightest. Given, because every single cartoon ever since took inspiration from Avery, so it makes perfect sense why it kind of... Yeah. But yeah, it feels modern in its sensibilities in a way. And a really good first effort from the Avery team. Really, last episode we covered his first directorial effort at Warner Brothers. He learned. He got better. Yeah. He does get better.
They do get better. Nah, good stuff. Not perfect, but good stuff. I give this a 4 out of 5.
I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5.
Okay, perfectly acceptable. All right, now let's get into something that everybody can get behind. Droopy Dog.
Yeah.
I freaking love it. I only remember it when I'm watching cartoons of his, but I actually really like Droopy. Droopy's great, you know.
My thing with Droopy Dog, it's very much like either I saw him during like the Tex Avery hour, or... He would be the one character that would show up in any, like, contemporary Hanna-Barbera projects. Like, for some reason, they're like, hey, let's, okay, like, 9 out of 10, it's usually because someone on the staff do a really good Droopy Dog voice. Doing a Droopy voice is so easy that, look this up, apparently, because it's Bill Thompson who legally is the voice of Droopy Dog. But like, according to people who worked with Tex, they're like, oh yeah, there were shorts where it was just Tex doing Droopy Dog. It's not the hard voice to do.
Like, okay. Like, one of my favorite recurring Game Grumps bits is when they're playing a Zelda game and either Aaron or Dan will just go into a droopy voice. Because it's a Sato, like, part droopy, part angry video game nerd trying to review the game. And there was one where they were playing Twilight Princess where you hear them just going back and forth in droopy voices with, you may think this is the end of the game, but no, there's five more agonizing hours.
We've merely entered phase 3 of 27 phases. Why do they call it Twilight Princess? Because you'll be in the twilight years of your life before it's over. Now walk through the door.
It's so silly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Droopy Dog is great. I also love Droopy Dog's bit in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Which again, like, hey, we can do the voice. That's Richard Williams doing Droopy for that one. Just like, yeah, sure, why not?
It's not a hard job. I can sort of do one. It just takes more practice. You know, it's not like other voices where I can pick it up immediately. Like Zoidberg, I picked up immediately. Like, hey, what's going on? You know, but like, just
okay. Do Zoidberg, but really depressed and like slow down.
Why does everybody want my food?
There you go.
See, there you go.
There you go. Figure it out.
That's one of my favorite ever bits we ever did of just the Last Hungry Cat narrated by Zoidberg.
Why don't you get some food?
It's very possible that Mark committed murder.
Murder?
No, I didn't.
I hope you haven't been able to murder anything.
I love that one. I love that one so much. It was number 100 for us, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, buddy, we're 21 episodes away from 200. Let's get fucking ready for that audience.
Fuck. All right. That's this year. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Dumbhounded is the cartoon we should be talking about.
Yes, it is.
Dumbhounded was released on March 20th, 1943. In terms of what happened on this day, there was a war going on. And on this day, a German U-384 boat was bombed and sinks. Dumbhounded was directed by Tex Avery, written by Rich Hogan. Frank Graham plays the wolf felon guy. Bill Thompson obviously plays Droopy. This is the first ever Droopy Dog cartoon. Even though it says Droopy right at the beginning, they were starting a new
There would be character. More.
Yes, there would be plenty more. Thank God, because Droopy's great.
And my favorite bit of history about Droopy that I looked up while I was prepping this episode was that, Tex Avery and the Academy never really got along. Not a lot of his work got Oscar nominations. But there was a short they did much later called, like, 90... Okay, it's not called 99 Droopy, but it's essentially 99 Bugs if it was Droopy, essentially. And apparently that was based off of a Avery Droopy cartoon from like the 40s. They're like, let's just make this cartoon again, but it's at medieval times because 99 Bugs did so well. And that did get nominated for an Academy Award. So it's this weird thing where it's like...
Well, I'm glad something finally did it.
Yeah, well, like... I'm feeling like if I'm Tex Avery, I'm like, wait a minute, you ripped me off. What the hell? Whatever, fuck this.
You know, once you start ripping off me going down the cliff three times, then I'll get really mad.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is the first Droopy cartoon, and already the format is pretty ironed on. So, here's our setup. It is a killer wolf that is escaping from prison. I love how the second he sort of breaks out, the animation of the prison searchlights are immediately going crazy, and I love that. And so, yeah, he escapes from prison. I also love the gag where he just sort of, you know, runs away, and his shadow also does the same thing and runs away. And they escape from prison, and he's hiding out somewhere in New York, and you get all these watchdogs roaming the countryside to try and find him. And one of these watchdogs is, of course, following behind all the rest of them is Droopy Dog. And immediately he tells you what the cartoon is, where he turns and he goes, And now you've instilled me with confidence that I can do this impression, Mark.
Thank you.
He goes,
hello, all you happy people. You know what? I'm the hero.
And like that, a star is born. Because like he just tells you, like, hey, I'm going to be the person that stops this. He tells you right up front, like, you know, there's an escape killer going on. It's going to be me that brings him down. And you have to, like, you have 8 minutes to believe that, where it's like, okay, instead of all these dogs, it's going to be foiled by this guy. And people who are not familiar with Droopy Shtick are going, yeah, right. But once you realize what this is, like, oh, Droopy is inevitable. Also, him quickly pissing behind a fire hydrant is even funny.
Yeah, it's just like, I love it as he goes over to another dog, and the dog just barking like crazy, and then just like, dog tick. Like, I love how we begin
this, that one.
We begin this cartoon, and it's very much like, here's this little dog character. He talks very slowly. And he's going to be our hero. And then he finds the guy.
Yes, first of all, the guy is in a trash... Droopy's about to look in a trash can, and he has a... Again, Tex is too fucking good at sign gags, because a sign just pushes out and goes, nope, I'm not in here. And that works for a moment. And of course, you know, he goes back up to his apartment and Droopy is there. And that is what is going to keep happening because, you know, anytime he tries to escape or leave Droopy out, then Droopy is just there. And, you know, now one could make the argument that this is a one gag cartoon. I'm not going to. Because that one gag at least has enough variations and funny things and escalation, and it's not just the same gag a million times. It's what is going to be the new version of this gag? What is it going to mean this time for this gag? And also because you have Droopy, who's just a very funny character, whatever he says, things are going to keep happening. So just the initial version of this, where he's basically, Droopy's going to be like, all right, I'm going to call the police. Don't move a muscle. I'm going to stay right here. Like, you stay right here, I'm going to, you know, call the police. And of course, you know, the wolf immediately hightails it out of there. And there's this wonderful speed of animation where the wolf gets out of there by car, by boat, by plane, and makes it to a cabin in the middle of the forest on a deer, and then settles in there, and then Droopy, of course, right behind him going, you moved, didn't
I? That screams, and then he screams as... It goes in reverse.
Yes, everything plays backwards.
The music is backwards. It's so fucking funny.
So fucking funny.
Again, so contemporary. That sounds like, yeah, of course that would happen. Oh, God. It's only the fucking 40s. My goodness.
Oh, my God. And here's the thing, because he goes back to his apartment after, like, literally just chaining up Droopy and leaving him in the cabin. He goes back to his apartment, and Droopy, of course, is there sitting on the bed. And so already you have this guy demanding an explanation from Droopy, who is the arm of the cartoon, moves with the logic of the cartoon, and is this inevitable force that moves with the cartoon always. And Droopy responds, now let's not get nosy, bub. He's completely passive about it. Droopy is going to show up anywhere the person he's trying to find is and keep annoying them until they get their comeuppance. And he
is completely God.
Again, Droopy is inevitable. Is this overpowered, unstoppable force, and he's almost completely unaware and downplaying what he can do. It's like, oh, that? Yeah, hey. I can do that.
Hey. You know what they should do? Because there's that Multiverses video game, right? With, like, the Warner Brother characters and Hanna-Barbera characters. When that game officially comes out, throw Droopy in there and make him OP as shit. Make him, like, totally overpowered in the game to the point where, like, during tournaments, people have to honestly, with a straight face, say, Droopy is banned. You can't use Droopy.
Here's what you gotta do.
What?
You gotta make it in the story mode. You gotta go, okay, do you want to add Droopy to your cast of characters? Fine. Defeat him in one-on-one combat.
Right.
Not so easy, is it? Where you literally, you think you've gotten the last, like, third of three life, and he shows up behind you and does his final smash or whatever. He's like, sorry.
Exactly.
The winner is Droopy!
What?
And his like, you know, like the you know, the thing where they you know, have people do like moves when they have the first place thing, and he just does, right, like, you know,
I'm happy.
But yeah, I love that, like, any attempt to try and get to the bottom of how Droopy is doing this is like, okay, let's not get nosy. You're not gonna find an explanation. This is a cartoon, buddy.
So Droopy just, I'm sorry, so the wolf just leaps out of, leaves the building and goes across America, but not before Droopy just turns to the audience and goes, I do this sort of thing throughout the picture. Essentially.
That's a clamp it gag, Tex.
Hey, you know, it's entirely possible. Hey, man, those are writer's rooms, man. It's possible Tex was the one who was like, have Cecil say this.
This kind of stuff from the old picture.
Probably. Yeah. So, we just see this map of America goes all over. Yeah. Like,
all over the place.
Goes to Hollywood, and I think he like,
hey! And he goes to the North Pole, and he gets in an igloo and goes, yeah, I know, he'll be right here behind me, and there's a sign that says, nope, it's too cold. That cracked me up.
That killed me.
Oh, same. And then, of course, he eventually gets in there. He calls him on the phone, saying, hey.
Yeah, turn around, you have company.
Now, there, in between the actual gags, there's a thing this cartoon does with just the speed of animation. Like, there's one we skipped over earlier of the banister sliding, where you think it's going really fast, and you pan over, and it's just Droopy's going the exact same speed, and it almost slows down. And I also love the moment where the wolf is so frantic to get away, he runs off the film, and you see him leave the film strip.
He leaves the film strip, yep.
I love that.
Yeah.
There's also the moment, because he's literally like at the very top of this building, and he's you know, going to jump, and you know, it's like, if you don't do this, I'll jump. It's all right, fine, Jim. And the shot from the top of the building where we can see the bordering states below him. We can see New Jersey,
woo!
And all the other. That's great.
I love how, because like, listen, in any other, even in Falling Hair, which you could argue is kind of the equivalent, actually exactly of the equivalent. In Falling Hair, it's just the character falls down, and that's kind of it. Maybe they yell and scream, but it's just falling. I like how with this one, it's the character's falling, keeps falling, falls by an Undertaker who's looking at the action, yes, outside. The Undertaker then jumps out the window. It's almost like this is Tex being like, fuck you, WB. Here's what I'm going to do. We're going to have one character jump, then have another character jump. And then he just takes his measurements, and then he just goes up. He just goes up back into the building. The Undertaker.
I love Tex Avery cartoons because other director can make that make sense.
Oh, what it makes so much fucking sense here. Oh, God.
But of course, you know, I also love that he makes it to the bottom without getting hurt. He's like, oh, yeah. Well, I forget what his excuse was.
Good breaks.
Yeah, breaks. And then you just cut back to Droopy with a giant ass boulder.
Oh,
this is about to get gruesome or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Chucks it down.
It's like The Rock has an inscription on it. Like, man, this is going to hit him as hard as wet fish or something.
Yep.
Like, even The Rock has a line. Look, everything has a gag or joke, including the fucking Rock. And not the wrestler.
I was going to say, The Rock usually does have a line, and it's, can you smell? No.
Oh, God.
I love this new mic. I love this new mic. I patted it. I was like, oh, here you go. The ending is a little uncharacteristic, because it's like the police gives him like a medal or something, or gives him a whole bunch of like
thousands
money.
Of dollars.
Gives him a lot of money. Yeah, and he and Droopy does, like, you know, like really excited yippies, woohoos, and like, you don't expect Droopy to do that. Of course, it's supposed to be a subversion. It's like,
yeah, yeah, like,
yeah, I'm
like,
happy.
Like Droopy becomes a Looney Tunes character in those like 5 seconds. Just, anyway, I'm very happy.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah. Oh God.
So. Oh man, this was something. Mm-hmm. I will admit that it gets a little repetitive, but the gags, the energy, the force that is Droopy, the variety of different ways to approach the same outcome is all excellent. You can see why they kept at this character and kept doing more and more different types of cartoons for him. I think it's a perfectly simple and good conflict to start with, and it just keeps hitting that over and over, and we don't tire of Droopy. We don't tire of the concept. It just works. It's. I'm toying with whether or not it's perfect, but it's just really good.
Well, to quote Droopy Dog in this cartoon, I'm happy. 3 minutes in to watching this cartoon, I message you like, dude, we gotta do more Droopy. Because, like, this is great. Like, this is really good.
I would love to. They're so good.
Yeah, man. This is a goddamn delight. Fantastic animation. Great gag work. There's a reason why Droopy Dog kind of became the de facto MGM mascot. You know, it's kind of weird, right? Because, like, I think Droopy Dog represents MGM, while Tom and Jerry's very much represents Hanna-Barbera within this time period, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
So I very much understand why Droopy Dog became this very great character to use, because, oh my god, he's so fucking good. So fucking funny.
Oh my god, I love this one. I really shouldn't, but I'm not giving this the full mark, so I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5, but I did love this one.
That's fine, because I am. I'm giving this a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, you're allowed. Apples.
Oh, solid. Really good shit.
Well, we've been through two that are easy to talk about.
Yeah.
Now let's get to this one.
Okay, this is Symphony in Slang. Came out on June 16th, 1951. Gods, what happened on that day? This is a weird one, in that it's a little bit long, and I got it off of a third article. It's weird. Like the sources I used to look up stuff on this day, it was like nothing. And I typed in this date into Google, and it's this Wikipedia article. So here's what I'm going to read. Okay, so in January 1951, Dr. James Van Allen, instrumental in the development of the Aerobee rocket, joined the physics department at the State University of Iowa. Along with University of Chicago graduate Melvin B. Gottlieb and Van Allen's first SUI graduate student, Leslie H. Meredith, they began a high-altitude cosmic ray research program using equipment mounted on balloons launched from June 16th, 1951 through January 26th, 1952. This experience set the foundation for balloon launch sounding rockets, which would first reach the boundary of space in 1954.
Hmm.
Yeah. A little science history fact for you.
All of that was to put research into cosmic rays. I mean, look, I say what you will about it. It's a fine restaurant. But I don't see why you're putting that money into it.
Is that where they found him? The man, the myth, the legend. Sunny Eclipse? Known alien.
I forget the guy's name, but sure.
At cosmic ray. I did too. That's why I looked it up. The alien who performs at cosmic rays at the Magic Kingdom in Disney World. I know, because that's where I had lunch.
Yeah, I've had lunch there too.
I went there.
Yeah.
Call me a Linkara bastard because those chicken fingers were delicious. Anyways.
Look, it Tomorrowland is cool shit, man.
Yeah, it is.
I like it there. It is. You know, I it's perfectly fine. It's either there or Pecos Bill's in Frontierland
didn't eat there, but I sat outside of it in those like rocking chairs they got. It was really nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
It's pretty nice. Yeah.
I had a Mickey pretzel there. It was nice. Anyways.
Oh, very nice.
How's happening on that day?
Sorry.
Yeah. So this short was directed by Tex Avery, written by Rich Hogan. Jordan, I will find any excuse to talk about my Disney trips. Anyways,
I love Disney too, don't worry.
Yeah, it's good. So, fun fact from IMDb. So this may be legitimate, maybe not. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's animation producer, Fred Quimby. Oh, that scamp. Well, let's see what he had to say. Originally was opposed to making this cartoon.
Did he and Eddie have like a let's say no to him committee?
Maybe. However, Tex Avery used his... I doubt this is legit. Used his witty vocabulary and convinced Quimby by telling him that there was nothing else ready at the time for animation production. So essentially, Tex went, well, you see, Fred, this is all we got. Now, God, you know, I know you normally ask for like two shorts of every 3 months for me. This is the only one we got in the can. So unfortunately, we are going to have to make this cartoon.
I also think you might have thrown in. Also, if you don't let me do this one, I'll tell the press that you told me to, quote, back off of this Hitler fella.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, buddy. It's
all right, make whatever you want, then.
Yeah, buddy, it's 1951. Very hard on the, if you supported the Nazis, get the fuck out mentalities. So maybe.
He gets a call from Churchill. You're doing the right thing. We shall fight them on the cartoons. We shall fight them on the short films. Bleh.
So, our cartoon begins in heaven. Which is kind of funny, because, like, we learned to cover a cartoon that where it ends in hell. So we're covering all
the... Yeah, the other one ended in hell.
Yeah. Yeah, which is kind of funny, because, like, you would think with Tex Avery, it's very much like, well, I'm probably going to hell, but, sure, why not?
Yeah, whatever.
As, you know, it's St. Peter, you know, letting the people into the gates, and you have to tell them about your life so you can write it down in their records. And then this hip guy comes in, and he's like, hey!
Okay, daddy-o. No, wait, no, that's a different hip character.
What's cooking, eh? What's on the up and up? And St. Peter's like, what's cooking? What are you talking about? I mean, I'm going to send you over to Noel Webster.
Noel Webster, the guy that wrote the dictionary. He'll know what you're talking about. Can I just say how much I love this concept?
Oh, yeah.
It is, I mean, it's very much an outlet for blackout gags, actually. But the concept of having Noel Webster, who wrote the dictionary, translate modern colloquialisms through animation is a really clever one, especially for Avery, because he's known for being bawdy and energetic, but not enough for being clever. And this is a really clever, intelligent concept. She's like, all right, let's see what the creator of the dictionary thinks of all of these slang terms.
So he takes it over to Noel Webster. It's like, hey, listen, Webster, can you just help me out here? I don't know what he's saying. Can you just translate it for me so I can write down in our records?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Webster, you're like, oh, well, okay. Sir, tell me about your life. And then our cartoon really begins. And what this cartoon is its expressions and turns of phrases,
idioms, cliches,
all set to this story, using all of these to tell a full story.
So, do you want to know the really obvious reason why I think this cartoon is genius?
Is it because if we try to explain it, it would just sound like we're reading the script?
No. here's what it is. Because if there's one particular portion of the population that maybe has some issues with literalism and cliches and idioms. It is the autistic population, because there is a tradition of us really taking things literally and not understanding idioms and not understanding turns of phrase and taking things very literally. And to have, I there were a lot of like books and stories I had to utilize growing up that basically explained idioms and explained what people were trying to say, what they actually meant. And if I would have had a cartoon like this when I was a kid, which for the record, I did watch this on the Tex Avery Hour, so I knew this one very well. But if I was able to consult this when learning how to work through idioms, I think I would have been very much enriched, because it's basically a way of saying, this isn't the wrong way of understanding people. It's just sometimes people have accumulated more turns of phrase and more colloquialisms than you, and sometimes it's okay if you don't completely understand what they're saying. Sometimes you may just need to get them onto your level. And this is just an entire story told by colloquialisms and idioms, and I think it's a perfect exercise and lesson for younger audiences with autism or with neurodivergent disability of some sort, and who want to understand the complexities of the modern world. So that's already a mark in this cartoon's favor, because oh my god.
I mean, I guess we can briefly go into like what it really begins with. You know, I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, and this confuses Webster. It's like, why? Like, he thinks about his head, and just like this guy. Which, by the way, the animation style of this cartoon, it's like, it's really cool, because it's only 1951, and already Tex Avery is adopting the UPA style, really. Like, it's very much flatter designs while still having that energy from his earlier work. So, you know, it's like, oh, it's more than a spoon in my mouth. And then, like, this random character opens his mouth, and there's, like, a photo of a silver spoon in the guy's mouth. It's like, well, not anything. You know, like, there's ones where, you know, it's like, man, I grew up overnight, and it's just a baby. It really throws a bit into the...
It's lots of those.
Yeah, it's a lot of that, and it's done incredibly well.
I wrote down some of my favorites, because it tells the story of somebody who comes of age and, you know, sort of bides his time. It's the American experience. He bides his time. He does odd jobs here and there, meets the love of his life, gets thrown in prison for trying to trying to dine and dash, comes back, and the woman's been sleeping around, and falls down dead when he realizes he has to take care of somebody's kids. The whole thing is that the character isn't supposed to be likable, and honestly, I would make the point that he really should be in the other place, because he seems like he's taken too many free rides in his life and hasn't really taken responsibility for his own actions. But yeah, there's a lot of these that I really liked. I was beside myself with anger, where there's two of them there.
Yes, I wrote that down as well. It's a good one.
There, a beautiful girl stepped into the picture, where the woman literally like goes into the photo album bit. My absolute favorite one in this was when he sees the girl for the first time and he says, my breath came in short pants, and you literally see pairs of shorts fall out of his breath.
Oh, mine was the one where there was a hand made into a dress.
Mary's clothes fit like a glove.
Clothes fit like a glove, yeah. I'm like, that is a great crazy one. Image. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it for that.
But not even the really over-the-top ones. Like, some of the simple ones where he goes, we went around together for some time, and it's just him two stuck in a revolving door. Also, the idea of a cocktail being literally the tail of a rooster being thrown into a glass. It's such a Tex idea, and I'm not sure if I can explain how.
Yeah, also, I had like, a Maltese mule? What, like all of a sudden,
a Moscow mule.
Moscow mule, yes. Like my Moscow mule.
Yeah.
A moose from Moscow.
That's a drink that I like.
Yeah. Results to see. I went here some as well. She ate like a horse, puts on the fucking...
Yeah, just a muzzle.
Muscle, which is great.
So good.
There's a mention of a restaurant where a bunch of the boys were hanging around, and you literally see them hanging from the rafters.
Now, the one criticism I do have about the short, and I'm not entirely sure how they could have done this, no music for a lot of it. It's very quiet, which, like, I get it. Like, they want the animation to do most of the work. That's more of the focus. They want to make sure you're hearing the guy when he's saying these turns of phrases. But, you know, there might be like a little bit of a jaunty tune underneath it because there's no music until the guy goes to the bar. And he's like, yeah, the pianists are playing it by ear. And he's actually using his ear. And it's just
music. The other real issue I have with this cartoon is that sometimes the gags fly too fast, where you really don't get a moment to breathe and digest some. Sometimes they go too quickly that you are still stuck on three gags ago and you're missing some. Like, there's some movies that are like that. The Lego Batman movie is very much too gag a minute for me sometimes, even though it's excellent. Like, you have to sometimes just be like, okay, maybe you should space them out a little bit more. And I don't know if that was Texas style in this one, but yeah, I think the goal was to have as many as possible. And for what this is, it works, but just for my liking, maybe it was a bit much.
Some other gags I liked here. When they're having a disagreement, him and the girl, he says, it was too late. She was on her high horse. Cut to a large horse. And the guy's like, yeah, she wouldn't pay attention even if I touched with a 10-foot pole. Gets a 10-foot pole, tucks it towards the horse, right down here. Oh, it's whenever I'm a Jordan.
And I replied, you're like 6 inches shorter than me. It's not that much.
I'm 5'9".
Oh, why did I think you were 6 foot? All right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Again, that's not much.
Not really, no, but yeah.
A little less than a foot. Why did I think you were taller? All right.
Oh, so did I. So did I, and I actually did get like a checkup like a month ago. It's like, oh my, you're 5'9". I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't know that.
It's all right. I thought I was 6'8" for a good couple of months. So,
This has been Height with That's Not Good, folks. Stay tuned next
Height.
Stay tuned next week for Weight.
No, we're not doing that. No,
it's fine. It's called Weight. It'll come out in like 5 years.
Well done.
Thank you.
I've actually lost weight, but all right. I don't know where it is. But anyway, that's the kind of mood this short has put us in.
Yeah.
We're doing weird puns all day.
Yes. Well, it kind of fits in with the cartoon, honestly, so.
Yeah.
Said that for all. Yeah, I very much loved the, I caught her going around with her old flame. It's literally a fire with a monocle on a top hat. I'm like, yes.
I read somewhere, and I don't listen to much of this music, but I read somewhere that there was a track. It was an MF Doom side project called Mad Villain that sampled that specific part of the song where she was going around with a flame.
Same game. Can't reform them.
That Mary was going around with an old flame. That burned me up. Because I knew he was just beating her alive. But the guy really spent his money like water. I think he was connected, so I left. Outside it was raining cats and dogs. I was feeling mighty blue. And everything looked black. But I carried on.
Interesting. Of course he'd be into Tex Avery cartoons.
The one gag I didn't like in this, because he gets really depressed and all that, and eventually it's like, but I carried Arn. He's just carrying the word Arn his back. I'm like,
so? I don't care.
I preferred the it joke better, where it was like, I was trying to hide from it. Yeah. I was trying to hide from it. And it's just like, he's hiding the word like it or something. It's like, oh, okay. I don't know. They kind of get weird, is what I'm saying. I think the guy went a little bit too far in some places where it's like, okay, now we're just kind of doing this for gag's sake, which given that this is also another long one.
Yeah, I've run out of the gags that I stockpiled, but
it ends. He eventually, he gets a line, he gets a wire from the girl that says, "Hey, come over." And as it turns out that she had a bunch of little ones, and there's like ones lying around.
That's just a little number ones, yeah.
And the husband's been overworked to death, and I guess he saw that, and then he died laughing, and then as he's laughing, the coroner just picked him up and take him away, and that's how he wound up there. I think that's how it ends. I'm like, what even is the?
No, it ends with a little cat got your tongue gag. Oh yeah, yeah, the reprise of that. But it's yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I think this is one of the few shorts that we've created on the show where you really gotta watch it before you listen to our discussion. Because a lot of a lot of the strength of this cartoon isn't. It really is the visuals in this. It's really like you're missing out on 90% of the gag work and why this short is as good as it is if you're not watching it. So stop listening to this. Stop listening. Stop listening to this show and go watch the cartoon and then come back. Anyways, it's an interesting one. It's a very interesting one. It's definitely
very.
It's probably Tex's most like brainy cartoon, like mostly intellectual cartoon. Which, because I think Tex Avery, you think like Red Hot Riding Hood, you think like pure sex, pure debauchery, don't use your brain on this one. But this one is very much like, no, like, these are terms or phrases that, hey, people still use it. It's held up incredibly well in that respect, which, thank God.
Extremely well. No, I think this cartoon's overall importance and significance at times eclipses how much I like it. I like this a great deal, but as I said, the gags fly so fast that it's hard to really enjoy all of them, and the story itself hits a lot of unlikable points just to hit all the good cliches. But I love that a cartoon like this exists because of the dichotomy between literalism and colloquialisms is fascinating when explained like this. It's not a complete slam dunk for me, but I really, really, really enjoy this one, and I think more people should see it. If you haven't seen it, see it. It's great.
Yeah. Please do. You'll get so much of why this is a good cartoon by watching it. It's
yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm giving this anvil rating of 4 out of 5 anvils.
That is exactly what I'm giving it. I like it just plenty. Wouldn't watch it every day, but I like it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very much that. All right. Let's see what you guys had to say about these Avery MGM shorts.
All right, we have one from Colin Reed at C. Reed 2852. Some of the master's better cartoons, he says, on these three that we covered this week. And he also says Symphony in Slang was one of Avery's '50s cartoons. I thought there was an adjective in there.
Well, I would assume he meant to say one of his better cartoons, because it is a really good cartoon.
No, yeah, I enjoyed covering that one. I'm glad I have memories of it from before.
We also have a comment here over on our Instagram from the Pembroke, Chrissy, and James kind of sort of funny cartoon podcast Instagram, who says that Droopy was a character who could only come from someone like Tex Avery.
Yes.
In his animated worlds, where reactions are so exaggerated, a nearly motionless, monotone character already has impact just by virtue of standing out from the pack. Giving this almost static lump of a character the agency versus the wolf, whose movements are filled with sharp angles that are contracting and expanding in every possible direction throughout Dumbhounded, is visually brilliant. It's the final form. And we brought this up in the episode, so I'm glad that they figured this out, that they saw this too. It's the final form of what Tex Avery was trying to accomplish with Cecil Turtle, which never reached the proverbial finish line, even as he kept beating bugs to the literal one.
No, I agree with that.
That makes all the sense in the world. Like, it is very much Tex looking at the Cecil shorts and going, we can go further with this. And sure enough, it's like, what? And they sure did. You learn to say also without Droopy, there's arguably no Huckleberry Hound. And I'm sure you both know by now how much I love Old Huck.
I know you're into a lot of the 60s era, 70s era stuff. And I know that that's one of the big characters from there. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for your comments.
Yes. Before we get to what we're covering next week, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Patreon subscribers. That's right. We have a Patreon. If you didn't know about it, you know now. On Patreon, you can subscribe to That's Not Quite All Folks and get plenty of goodies, such as commentaries, bonus material, full uncut episode logs, and lots of fun stuff that you will get the opportunity to have at a $1 level or a $5 level. And I would just like to thank our current patrons, including Andrew, Triscrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the person, not the drink, my cousin Neil, and Judy M., for giving to this wonderful podcast. And if you'd like to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/TNQAF. Trust me, it'll be worth it. So, we've just spent 2 weeks covering Tex Avery cartoons, and we've really enjoyed ourselves. I think we've gotten a lot of really good stuff done here, and we've had a lot of really good conversations about the Avery canon. And if you know us, if you've been listening to us for the nearly four years now. Oh my God, we've been doing this for 4 years. If you've been listening to us for that long, you know that we like to lead up to movie episodes with, you know, curriculum like this. And so what better way to follow 2 weeks of Tex Avery episodes than with a coverage of a movie that is almost directly inspired by the works of Tex Avery. And it's a movie that we both grew up with. The inimitable classic, 1994's The Mask, directed by Chuck Russell, starring Jim Carrey. It's a classic, and we're doing a movie episode on it next week. And that's not all.
Oh, not quite?
That's not quite all, folks.
Oh.
You see, remember one of our most expansive episodes to date, the Space Jam episode, and the deep dive we did there, thanks to our friend at Vericon, Brandon. We really like that episode. It's one of the proudest I've ever been of a Pinal product. And we figured, okay, real talk. We were going to have Brandon on the Christmas special. And things fell through. His schedule was a bit crazy. And he said, I'd like a rain check, but if there's any future episodes you would like me on, let me know. And I said, well, we have future episodes on and also The Mask. And he said, I'd love to do The Mask. I love that movie. I have so much background on that movie. And so we said, we'll let you know when we record. And so Brandon from Vericon will be joining us on next week's show on The Mask. Yes. He has a lot of stuff prepared to help us out with that one. Yes. And I'm really excited to get into that one.
Oh, yes. And I am very excited to edit another 3 hour long episode. Wait a fucking minute. Jordan.
Yeah.
You can edit 3 hour long episodes. You want to help me on the end on this one if it goes long?
Yes, please. I'd love to.
Cool.
Sure.
There we go.
You know, I can do that. I edit another podcast now on reality television. So if you're into Survivor Historians, I edit that now. So I can only take credit for the cleanness of the edit. I can't take credit for how funny it is. That's all of them. But I edit podcasts now because it's like editing video just without one component. So it's a lot easier. So
isn't it? Yeah. All right.
Yeah, stay tuned for that next week. You're gonna love it.
Oh man. A really fun story about how I got that movie. It's really good. All right. So that is the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If I keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's movie episode, you can follow at that_Looney. Both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also follow our podcasts wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post clips from episodes, as well as shorts, which we put on our TikTok account, which we have for some reason.
You can also, if you haven't already, support the podcast at www.patreon.com/TNQAF. We just recently posted our commentary on Looney Tunes Back in Action. We had a lot of fun with it. And Mark just saved himself from having to eat spicy Chinese food by not mentioning Coyote versus Acme one more time.
Yeah! All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and we hope that you enjoyed these Avery cartoons as much as we did. I'm going to go back to my hole in the wall and put the silver spoon back in my mouth. Good night.